Before we begin this episode of Between Two Wings, our guest is a pilot with the NOAA Hurricane Hunters. We spoke with her earlier this summer before any named storms had made landfall in the U.S. Since our interview, several storms have hit the U.S., including Hurricane Ida, which made landfall in Louisiana in late August. It affected more than a million people and left destruction in its wake. Necessary preparations for these storms wouldn't be possible without the NOAA pilots who fly through hurricanes to help forecasters and scientists gather operational and research data. And welcome back to Between Two Wings. I'm your host, Emily Norman, and today we have Lieutenant Commander Becky Shaw with us. She is a hurricane hunter and test pilot for NOAA, which is incredibly impressive. And for someone who lives near the Gulf, I highly thank you for everything that you do. So, Becky, thank you so much for coming on the show, especially during hurricane season.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Definitely. So we start off each episode kind of explaining our backgrounds. And like I said, I live near the Gulf. This is actually my town behind me. Hurricanes and evacuations are very well known in this area. So once again, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. But tell us a little bit about your background.
I'm originally from Little Elm, Texas, which is north of Dallas, a little bit further from where you're located in Houston.
Yep.
And I learned to fly while I was still a midshipman at the United States Naval Academy. I commissioned in 2009 and flew for the Navy for 11 years as a naval aviator. I flew the P-3 in the Navy and the P-8 and a couple other aircraft before completing an inter-service transfer over to the NOAA Corps. So now I'm at Lakeland at the Aircraft Operations Center in Lakeland, Florida, and I fly the WP-3 Hurricane Hunter and the Twin Otter. Last year was my first hurricane season. I joined right at the end, and usually in October, November, it's pretty quiet. But last season, I got to fly on hurricanes Delta, Zeta, and Eta. And this season, we haven't flown any storms yet. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah, I know while we're currently recording this, there's a few things going on, one I'm particularly keeping my eye on. But if you have any control of that, you know, push it back into the Gulf, please. So let's dive in. Yeah, I know, right? So let's dive into it a little bit. You get the call that you are going out to fly into one of these storms. What's the process? What is it like? What's next?
So right now I'm currently sitting on the hurricane watch bell. So from June 1st until the end of November, we at the Aircraft Operations Center in NOAA, we have one to two aircraft that are instrumented and ready to go for hurricanes, as well as two to three P-3 crews that are kind of available for when the storm starts. So it's not, sometimes people, you go on the hurricane watch bill, you're just like, are they just gonna call you in the middle of the night and be like, there's a storm? But like, as you said, with our forecasting, you can already see that there's some low pressure systems. So the National Hurricane Center, the National Weather Service are down in Miami, and a few of our, the different parts of NOAA that take care of our like atmospheric observations, we'll start to watch these tropical depressions sort of progress and start to make predictions on when we're going to start flying. And that tasking will come to us from the National Hurricane Center. They'll say, hey, expect to start flying these times. They actually put out like a plan of the day, which is on the National Weather Service hurricane website for like which aircraft are going to be flying, which storms, and when we're going to get a fix in the storm. And that will apply to us and the Air Force's weather reconnaissance squadron, which flies C-130s instead of P-3s through hurricanes. So everyone's like, okay, we've got you tasked. This is when you're going to fly, like our flight schedule comes out. And so we'll show up to the brief with the rest of our crew. And our crew consists of typically three pilots. You have your hurricane aircraft commander who has flown several seasons through storms, has a lot of experience of all the different obstacles that can come up when you're flying storms. And then two more junior pilots, but typically the P-3 pilots are someone who's an inter-service transfer who has done 11 years in the military flying P-3s or other aircraft, or they're like our more senior NOAA Corps pilots. So they started out in Twin Otters and they've been in for 10 years. So even the junior pilots have like a lot of experience before they're just like, you're going into a storm.
I would hope so.
Yeah. We've got three pilots generally. We can fly with two. We have a navigator who in the Navy, they're called naval flight officers. In the NOAA Corps, we just call them navigators. And they're kind of looking at where the storm profile is going to be, like near coastlines, if it's going to be in other countries' airspace, and how we kind of need to navigate through those storms for our patterns. We deploy different maneuvers through storms. And then the person who's going to be briefing that initial flight is our meteorologist. So our flight director, our meteorologists actually fly with us. So anyone who's ever doubted your meteorologist, if you take them flying, like, they're very invested. And our meteorologists are amazing. So they'll actually brief our weather for us, which I think is a wonderful ability to have your own personal meteorologist staff before you go fly. We'll also have, because we have so many different science instruments, we have different, we have three different types of radars. We have radiometers. We're measuring a lot of different science parameters. We'll have some scientists that will come fly with us and operate their systems. And then we have our sort of like, they're not in-flight technicians. That's the name I call them in the Navy, but they're pretty much people who can fix anything on the plane.
And good people to have.
And then our flight engineers, if you ever watch the videos of a P3, it requires like a flight engineer. It's an older aircraft that operates, like, monitors all four engines and operates a lot of the icing systems. They'll usually be out pre-flighting and filling the aircraft and making sure everything's working. But they're the guys who are sitting in the middle operating the power levers in the storm. And when I talk about how we fly in the storm, you'll see why. So we brief, we come up with our game plan on how we're going to get out there, if we're going to expect weather on the way to the storm. We actually don't, like, just fly through thunderstorms if it's between us and the hurricane. If you're going to fly through a hurricane, you just want to do the minimum amount of time in the storm. So we'll actually park our way around thunderstorms on the way into a hurricane.
And is that kind of because there are some stressors on the aircraft, and so you're trying to make sure that, you know, you're not imposing more or hitting, you know, closer to the limits until you actually get to the storm?
Yeah, everything we do, while it seems like pretty, I don't want to say dangerous, but it has a elevated level of risk, we don't take unnecessary risk. So we have to, if there's a thunderstorm that we don't have to fly through, that isn't going to get as important science, and we're putting the crew and the aircraft at risk, it's just not necessary. We don't do
Definitely.
It.
Definitely.
So we'll fly out to the storm, and we'll begin our profile. And there's several profiles that we go through, but as we head into the storm will either be like, it'll be like either a closed storm that has like a clear eye, or there'll be ways to, maybe the eye's not closed and we're kind of picking our way through. The tasking will come from that first brief of how, of which sectors of the storm they want to see. Maybe they want to see the northwest portion of the storm first. Maybe they want to see the southeast portion of the storm first because of how it's developing. So we'll kind of like plan our maneuver through the storm on the way out. And then as you go through the storm, we have like a, we don't have like the normal radars, I think, that most people have on their aircraft. So don't try this at home.
For real, please don't, no one.
Please don't watch this. So we have a C-band radar. We have an X-band radar. And then we also have we also have a tail Doppler radar, which measures like the vertical profile of the storm. And so we're looking at all that information. The tail Doppler radar is really for research, and we're heading in. And at that point, as we get closer to the eye, it can be very turbulent. We're trying to maintain wings and level through the entire storm for the science, and also just to not have any type of rolling lateral acceleration, like over G the aircraft in some kind of 20 degree bank turn. So the pilot, the junior pilot who's sitting in the left seat, normally I'm just holding the aircraft straight and level, trying not to fight it so I don't over G the aircraft. Like, you never want to put in really huge, really aggressive control inputs.
But then you're just really fighting yourself as well.
Don't want to over G the aircraft. And so I'm just like trying to hold it as the winds are increasing, like I would say like a 65 knot crosswind, right? But you're flying with the airflow, you're not trying to land anywhere. The winds are changing so quickly that the flight engineers are moving the power. You'll almost see them like jockeying the power levers, like forward and back, to try to make those changes for how the winds will completely drop out or increase so quickly. And so we're trying to fly our turbulent air penetration speed around 210 knots. And so if it will be at 220 knots with the power levers all the way at flight idle. And at that point, the only thing you can do is slowly pitch up to avoid overspeeding the aircraft through a storm, not overspeeding the airframe, but not as fast as you want to be in a storm, right? Because you're on the other part of that. You're on the other part of that curve. And then we could easily find ourselves a second later at 200 knots with max power. And so now I'm slowly pushing those down so we don't get ourselves into a stall. So there's a lot of, there are a few moments that are very dynamic, but you have to be very calm to make sure that you're slowly putting in the inputs and you don't over G the plane because you could hurt the aircraft and you're also done with storm flying that day. So you kind of get like popped. So as you're heading, this is through the eye wall, heading through the eye wall, you kind of get popped into the eye. And it's the way they describe it is it kind of kicks you out the door. Like you expect a bump right before the winds change. And the eye, sometimes it's pretty clear. This isn't, the picture I have behind me isn't a picture of inside the eye, but inside the eye, the winds are trending down to zero. So right as we're flying in, now we can start to maneuver up to like 45 degrees angle of bank, looking mm-hmm. for the eye. And the meteorologist who's been helping us sort of navigate through some of the mesos, like the hooks that'll form in the eye wall, they will, they're now looking to drop a drop sonde, which is like, we drop it from the plane. It measures wind and temperature and pressure all the way down. They're looking for where that, they're trying to guide us to where the winds reach zero. And we call that hunting. We're like hunting for the eye. So hurricane hunters. And once we have that position, now we've gone from home to here, we can set a fix. And at that position, we're like, that's the center of the storm. So if we get multiple fixes, we can use that to see where the storm is tracking. So long story long, the same way you initially took fixes, maybe in like early navigation and flying, we're using those fixes to upgrade the storm. And we're learning a lot about the content of the storm, which you really can't see from satellites. You have to send something in to see how it's developing.
Yeah, so we do that's that. Why we have you.
Yeah. So we do that for like 5 more hours and then we come home.
And oh my, I can only imagine, you know, from your initial training, you're just taught stay away from the weather and the storms. Just don't even go near it. Don't try it at all. How do you mentally prepare yourself, especially when you're first starting out, to do the exact opposite of that?
Well, last year was my first season and I've flown unfortunately in some nasty weather before, never intentionally. Mm-hmm. But my first storms were all on the night flight. And I'm with a really senior crew. I really trust the meteorologist. I really trust my hurricane aircraft commander. But we're flying out. And as we're approaching the storm, you just see lightning everywhere. And everybody's just like, nobody's in like storm mode. They're just like chatting about their weekend. I'm like, everybody just seems really cool with this. They're like, yeah, this is pretty normal. And as we start to trek in, I'm flying and the aircraft commander, he's kind of explaining to me like how, you know, whether one radar is track stabilized, the other is heading stabilized. And he's like, yeah, just so you know, the returns on the radar showing you on either side is about 50 decibels. And that's about the highest it can read. So I would like make sure your heading is good, like really calmly. So I'm like, oh, okay. I'll just make sure that I am exactly on heading because based on whatever that means, it doesn't sound good. So
maybe my CFI should just tell me that when we're on the normal IFR training flight.
Yeah. Like, just so you know, on either side of this,
clear skies everywhere.
Yeah. So that'll keep you on parameters. But I think, I guess it's intense, but that makes it like really appealing. It's like you're focused the entire time on just trying to do what you're doing and the crew works together and the crew is really fun. And we really like, we really trust each other. And we know the information is important. So I like it.
Yeah. Having that team, I can only imagine it adds, you know, a sense of, okay, this is going to be good. This is going to be okay. We're doing our job and it's a very important job. Mm-hmm. And kind of touching on that aspect, you know, like me personally as well, I've evacuated before and it's all based off of the data that you guys are gathering. What you're doing really dictates movement of people and saves lives as well. Do you ever think about that while you're up flying around and on these missions?
It's really one of the really rewarding things about being part of these missions is that you're so close to the results. There was one of my first flights, I think it was on Delta. We had like 30 minutes between like our fixed time and we're kind of outside the storm and we had been bounced around pretty badly, but the plane was fine. We were just like, okay, are we going to sit out here for 30 minutes? Or are we going to go back into the storm? And we all kind of said, if we have 30 minutes of fuel, let's go back into the storm. Mm-hmm. And it was that pass that elevated it to the next category. And that allowed people who were in the path to be aware and for the Hurricane Center to like make the appropriate notifications to everyone on like what the storm was looking like. And so obviously we always assess the risk. Like mm-hmm. we don't let the pressure of that put us into a situation that would put the crew at risk. But being able to see how quickly like what you're doing that's sometimes difficult and hard work, like the fact that it has like a positive outcome and being so close to it is just, it's really awesome.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And I remember Delta, I was watching every update and I was on the website looking to see when you guys are going out to get more information. So it definitely hits home. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously this is, like you said, not dangerous, but there is risk and, you know, you have your whole team around, you can make it safe, but it's probably not for anyone, for everyone.
After my first flight, I think my commanding officer was like a little bit worried about how I was going to take it.
Yeah. And
I jokingly told him that because my first flight was a rapidly intensifying Cat 4, which is like, I guess that set the bar so like high that I bet to the bar at the point where I was like, oh, every storm's like this. And everyone's like, no. But I told him, I was like, no, I sufficiently blocked that one out. I'm just going to pretend every storm is my first storm flight and we'll just go into it with an open mind. It's like pretty wild, but I think people normally enjoy the work here and they kind of know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it just goes back to the fact that you have this experienced, calm team who's walking you through it and who has, you know, seen essentially all of it before, or knows, you know, how to deal with these situations probably really, really, really helps. So you've been flying in, you know, extreme conditions, but you also keep up with the GA flying as well. I know you're a CFI. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of take your experience flying in these extreme situations and kind of, you know, help translate into safety measures for your students or just other GA aviators?
It can be challenging for people who are used to doing a very specific, demanding tasks in aviation to try to take that and assume that applies to everything else. Yeah. But I try to remember to try to not get into that set of like complacency. I try to remember like the important basics that always apply regardless, like an aircraft is an aircraft. So one of the test pilots I flew with in the Navy during my test tour had said to me that his rule was you can push the weather and you can push the fuel, but never at the same time. So that's another one that gives you options. And then I've spoken to people in GA about their personal minimums. So in the military at NOAA, like we have our minimums, and I mean, our junior pilots, like they cut their teeth, like flying out on the northern slope, like VFR looking for like harbor seals and like polar bears, completely like out on their own with like 600 or 700 hours of flight time. Mm-hmm. So like they develop kind of like a healthy respect for weather as they kind of progress through their career. But for general aviation, like know what your personal minimums are. And if you haven't, yes, there is like an IFR currency, but if you haven't flown, ask yourself, could I maybe shouldn't approach the minimums today after not flying IFR or an IMC for the last 6 months, the last 4 months? Like maybe you could, but why would you set yourself up with that? Like give yourself an out. I've never shown up to an airfield that was just closed for no reason, but why wouldn't you give yourself a little bit extra fuel? And the same thing for weather. So don't force yourself to have to be a hurricane hunter. Like, give yourself a little bit of extra margin, either on the fuel or in the weather, and try to always like have a mindset for risk so that you can continue flying for your whole career and not put yourself or your passengers in a bad spot.
And like she said, definitely do not make yourself a hurricane hunter. But if you did want to become a hurricane hunter for NOAA, what's a good way to get into that?
Well, for those who are on active duty for the Department of Defense, I say that because the NOAA Corps falls under Department of Commerce. We're the smallest uniform service. NOAA is growing. So we have inter-service transfer boards for military aviators who are interested in coming over and flying our Twin Otters, our P3 or our G4. For those who are interested in like starting out in the NOAA Corps from the beginning and being a NOAA Corps officer and having the opportunity to see sort of all the science missions from day one, we have, you can apply to go to BOTSE, which I'm sure stands for Basic Officer Training Candidate School. I don't know. So they go through like the Coast Guard, they do through the Coast Guard version of OCS. So it's any other way that you would join the military, but you're joining the NOAA Corps where our mission is science, service, and stewardship. I'm sure that's the mission of the NOAA Corps. And so you'll get this opportunity to come in as an ensign and have this full 20-year career in the NOAA Corps where you can fly, you can work with the fisheries, you can explore like everything NOAA has to offer outside of weather. And I would say if, you're interested in doing some really diverse flying, it's definitely a good place to look, because you're still serving in uniform, you're still getting to lead, but you're flying awesome missions, even outside of the hurricane stuff. Everything we do at NOAA is really fun.
For sure. And I'm sure you've interested someone who's watching this right now to go look at the NOAA website and to dive more into the NOAA Corps. Becky, thank you so much for coming on this episode Between Two Wings. Again, especially in the hurricane season, I'm sure. Well, hopefully not. You won't be flying off anytime soon for my sake.
Yeah.
But thank you so much again for coming on this episode.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And also everybody watching at home, make sure you follow your local forecaster's guidance during this hurricane season.
Definitely. And prepare for hurricane season.
Absolutely.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for tuning into this episode Between Two Wings. We'll see you next time.
Hey!